In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And I can't believe it. We actually are doing 2 weeks in a row.
I know. As late as we are starting on the second one.
Well, you know, we get on tangents, although sometimes these tangents, we really should just record some of these tangents and then snip out pieces that we find interesting. Some of the stuff you don't necessarily want to bring forward. You gave an exclamation of surprise.
That's honestly not a bad idea. That's actually, dude, comp an entire episode. We'll just have archives.
I think that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there was an exclamation you had of surprise that very similar to the one that I used to use that I named the drink after.
Really?
In the sense that it was exceptionally dirty. It had to do with defecating on a certain part of your body and me doing that defecating. And I was just like, no, we don't do that kind of thing. But anyway,
that was by the way because of the what? You can't just explain something like that and if you and then not actually.
I'm giving context. Okay. I'm giving context. Okay. That was when I told you that there was a possibility that a movie was being remade, a fairly serious movie was being remade.
Oh man, let's open this.
As a musical,
just as a jazz.
Or not remade. Yeah. Sorry, not remade.
No, sequel. It's not being. Yeah, a sequel. Okay, so I'm gonna open this up real quick because here's the deal. Between the two of us, James, and I'm just gonna say what it is. Between the two of us, James absolutely hates the Joker movie. I don't think he's even taken time to see it, which I understand. To understand the synopsis of it and know that as far as me, myself, I consider it an homage. He considered it a complete ripoff. Potato potato, no, I guess in this case. But
it's not so much a ripoff. It's just the I can't get past the feelings and the purpose of the director in making the movie. I can't get past that to be able to, moreover, some of the reception of audience with the movie, not audience like you, but a specific group that kind of saw that movie as its calling card. Keep in mind, I've had similar problems in the last so many years with the movie Fight Club, in the sense that there are people
there
are people that identify with characters in Fight Club, and it's like, you are missing the freaking point.
You know what's funny
is I identify with them.
Yeah, that's what's so funny, because I absolutely hated Fight Club the first time and the multiple times I had seen it. Like, there's an interestingness to it, but I hated the moral code of it. And when you explained to me that that was the actual point of the film, was to be it, the point of the film is to be against those things that are heralded in the film as part of the dialogue, it made a completely different outlook. It gave me a completely different outlook on the film and made me appreciate it. This is one of those movies. Joker, and the point of Joker, is one of those movies. The character is not somebody to be sided with. It is not a commentary. It is not as much the character of the Joker in this film is not someone to be heralded as a hero. He is not a hero.
I have to disagree.
Okay, sorry. Hold on. Let me explain myself fully first. He's not a hero. He is not quite a bad guy. He is the wild card he is supposed to be in the universe that exists. But the Joker, as a character, constantly, every time the character has been created, every time, what the character is supposed to be, aside from like the first time he was supposed to be killed in 1938 in the original comic, and then that was retconned before the comic came out, was the fact that he wasn't just some weird, goofy character. He is a tragic character. He is someone that was screwed so fucking bad in a short period of time that it fucked with his sanity to the point where he felt that the world just didn't make any sense anymore. There are other theories, of course, that he is... that he is quote unquote super sane. I honestly think he's just insane. But the problem here is that you do not praise the fact that the characters world crumbled around him so much that he lost sense of reality, and then blame the world and turn him into a hero for acting out against that world. And there are people that are, they're putting that on a pedestal. That is big fucking problem.
That's a problem. And again, some of the reasoning behind why the director made the movie and his purpose for the character, from the interviews I read with him, he wasn't necessarily trying to make him tragic. I think there was a heroic bent that he was trying to get. This was a guy that was speaking out against a world that was wronging him, and the director felt like the world was wronging him with, he was previously a director of comedy films, but comedy films that were dying out because his comedy films happened to be very raunchy and using, premised on jokes that were considered no longer politically correct to use, and he felt stifled, and he felt like he was getting his voice taken away from him. So there are.
Oh, if this is a reflection, I will say this: if that is the case, oh, I see what he did. Oh, okay, yeah, I understand. I understand where you're coming from. So, want to mention it, yeah, if you want to mention it, he's done some hit films. He has.
Oh, yes.
He's also done some complete bombs. But the biggest one he's known for was directing Old School, right? Because I thought, it's funny, because I thought that was Judd Apatow. But no, it wasn't. So Todd Phillips grabbed, he snagged Old School, and that's probably the most famous. And then after that, he got the paycheck films. Like, there's no reason why Starsky and Hutch, the film remake, would make any type of a major audience 30 or 40 years after the show was out. Like, that's, yeah, it wasn't even valid. But that being said, yeah, he took some stuff for a paycheck. However, I can understand your idea where you're coming from as well. And if that's the commentary, I think it's wrong. And
he flat out said that he felt he did the Joker movie because he didn't feel he could do comedy anymore because he wasn't able to be funny in the way he knows how to be funny. He said that.
Well, if that's the case, then you're not funny.
That's,
you know, what's really funny is that's the premise of the Joker, which means he must get it. And I mean, that's the canonical premise of the Joker. He must get it. Like, so if that's what he wants to put himself out as, then I will, in theory, agree with that as someone that has seen the film. And I can, personally, as someone who's seen it, I've seen it a couple of times. It's very gruesome. It's not something you want to see more than, like, once or twice to really get the idea behind it. But the intensity of the film and the commentary on the state of the world and the state of society and mental health and all that kind of stuff has some validity to it, in that certain parts and pieces of it and a lack of support for those that wish to find a footing in themselves and in their mental health makes sense. That commentary is proper. However,
I can concede that.
I felt personally that was where it was going. However, if you are taking a tragic character like the Joker and you are making them a hero of their own film, because I didn't feel like he was. I felt like he was someone that watched the world fall apart in front of him and lost his sanity. And if that is the case, then point taken. And that happens. That happens to people, and it's terrible. That's worth the conversation. However, people that do catch it very, that catch that idea, that look at that film and think that he is a character to be worshipped are not correct. And they're the same people that will look at a film like, wonderful comparison, Fight Club, and take a look at Tyler Durden and see him as a wise man. That's fucking not right. That's not. I almost would have said that's fucking stupid. Like, I'll correct myself on that. But it is something that is, you're missing the point. You have completely missed the point of the fact that anarchist anti-establishment, the anarchist anti-establishmentarianism of for the sake of being anti-establishment is not the point. The point is that there are these things that there are these things in society that one has to continue to cope with, and the point is that you need to find your faith in that and continue to move forward to the best of your ability and do what you can in order to change the world around you, but you don't do it by destroying it.
Well, and again, like I said, I can't get past because of where it feels like from, again, the interviews that the director has given, it feels like his motivation was, it's hard for me to get past seeing the movie in any other way. And that's my problem with it. But
I can understand that entirely. I can understand that, especially seeing that you researched it in a different way before even wanting to consider seeing it. And that makes sense. You do want to see what's behind it, right?
I like to know what the motivation is behind any piece of art. I still like to know what the motivation is. I may have what it means to me, but it's also nice to know what the motivation is from the artist who created it, because I want to know what they were seeing, be able to see it through their lens, through their eyes, not just mine, and be able to reconcile those two things together. And so we just had over a 10-minute discussion about how serious this movie is, and they have talked about they are doing a sequel to this movie. Joaquin Phoenix is on for the sequel, but the sequel, apparently, this is the rumor that's going around. There's a couple of media outlets that have talked about this. I don't have full confirmation, but the rumor is that it is.
Hollywood Reporter normally is pretty on it. Like I said, I give them about a 50-50 sometimes. I do see some rumors that are like kind of out there and then they never come to fruition. But if this is the case, I don't even know.
So the talk is that the Joker sequel is going to be a musical and Lady Gaga will be playing Harley Quinn.
Son of a bitch.
Which, I mean, hey, at least we know that if there's any singing stuff for Harley Quinn, it's going to be decent singing.
Not only that, I mean, she also knows, not just is she, like, here's the thing, Lady Gaga is the shit, dude. Like, she's amazing in everything she does. I haven't seen anything I haven't liked from her. And
you're just talking her artistic stuff, right?
Yeah, her artistic stuff, like what she's able to do. But on top of the fact that, like, when she's cast in a film, she plays the hell out of that part. She does incredible.
She's a theater kid.
She's one of my favorite. Well, she's not only that, she knows how to ad-lib like a motherfucker. Like, so one of my favorite moments from Lady Gaga that I've ever seen is my wife and I were first dating. We had just started dating and we went out to go see my family for Thanksgiving because, I mean, things got serious real fast, right? We started dating in November. She went out to see my family at Thanksgiving.
Not like you didn't have a history, dude.
Right? I know we knew each other for like 10 years before this, right? So, so it's pretty. It was pretty well established when it started. Yeah, what's up?
Can I be honest?
Go on.
I mean, I kind of sort of think that she was kind of one. You may have had multiple before you reconnected with her and you started your relationship. You may have had multiple, but don't people have that one kind of example, or maybe a couple of examples of like the almost perfect significant other, the almost perfect person that you could be with?
Oh, for
sure. I'm pretty sure from back when you met her, back when we were all working at Blockbuster together, I'm pretty sure from that moment on, she was one, if not the one, that every other girl that you were with was kind of compared to.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I will say that flat out now. Like,
So I mean, we've had this conversation. That you compared, when that one, that unattainable one that you compared all the other ones to, finally you're able to have that moment with that one. It's like, yes, please.
Yep.
Definitely now.
Yep.
Yeah. I can put it into the language of hamburger. There is one specific hamburger that I judge all the other hamburgers by. And if I could have that hamburger again, it would be yes, please, right now. I can't because the place is gone. The place has been gone since.
Oh man.
Place been gone since '97.
Well, sir, it's better to have loved and lost, isn't it?
Yes, because I can at least remember the experience of that beautiful hamburger. That was a it was a great burger. It was the best burger I ever had in my entire life.
Oh,
completely.
Man.
It's been even though it's been 23 years since I've had 25 years since I had that burger. Still the best burger ever.
I you know what? I honestly, if it was any other person, I would say comparing the love of my life to your favorite hamburger would have been an insult. But I know.
But you know.
I know. Like, you have high standards for your hamburgers, well, sir.
And literally, hamburgers are my favorite food. Going back to I used to get made fun of with my parents would make fun of me, like most parents do. Most parents pick on you a little bit, right? There's a little bit of picking on this.
Yeah.
Unless you had nice parents that never did that. I know the truth, but whatever. But they you know, family fun picks on each other for things. I pick on my dad for things, you know, pick on mom. They pick on us. Siblings pick on each other.
Yeah. That's regular family interaction.
Yeah. And they love embarrassing, you know, all your friends and stuff with stories about when you were a little kid and the stupid things you do as a little kid. I had, and all kids have made up words, right? Made up words when they're little.
Yeah.
I had two things that one was a made up word. One was a word that they didn't understand what I was referring to until it clicked in their head. My dad worked when I was little, my dad worked at a Lucky's grocery store back when there was Lucky's grocery stores.
Wow. Lucky's. Mm-hmm. That's back there. In the day.
He worked there for 23 years. He worked for Lucky Stores. Yep. And he was, you know, he was a grocery clerk. Funny enough, he had to wear a tie to work every day. If you can imagine my dad in a tie. I mean, you've seen him once in a tie at my wedding, but that's otherwise my dad don't wear ties. But he did for work every day. I think he's maybe worn one 5 times since then. And I think it's been for kids getting married. That's about the only times that he wears a tie. But even when he got married, to his last wife, he didn't wear a shirt and tie. He wore a polo shirt. That's all he ever wears is polo shirts. Polo shirts or whatever. That's
fair.
But anyway.
That's fair.
He worked at a Lucky store that was right next to a Nation's hamburger. Now, Nations, I don't think we have any up in the Northern California area, but there were some in the Bay Area. Nations made a pretty good burger, at least from my recollection, which is dim on the Nations burger, because it had been years since I've been there. Too many years. But we'd all, you know, my mother would take me in there to eat when we were waiting for him to get off work sometimes, you know, or stop in and see him and then go eat there. And so, apparently, my made-up word was the word Uckaboo.
Uckaboo?
Uckaboo. Which confused my parents until I actually pointed at a hamburger one day and said, Uckaboo. Yes.
Wow.
The only real made-up word I had as a kid was what I called a hamburger.
I mean, when you consider the fact that it's at least 3 syllables and you were how old?
I would have been under the age of 4.
Bro, three. to be real, the fact that you're still learning to talk, hamburger is an extremely hard word for a young child to know.
Yeah.
The word Uckaboo is pretty fucking close. Like, I give you massive credit for finding something that at least sounds similar, because I'm quite sure that you just heard it in passing and were like, that must mean that.
I don't know what the genesis of it was, but when my parents figured out what an Uckaboo was, they loved telling that story for years and years. I don't remember calling it that. I just know it from the stories that my parents tell that, yes, that's what you called hamburgers. You called them Uckaboos. We didn't know what you were talking about.
Dude,
apparently when we were in there, I would want an Uckaboo, but I'd also want yellow. And it took them a while to figure out that yellow was mustard. That just shows my parents are stupid, because what the hell else are you going to find in a hamburger place that's yellow? It's fucking mustard. Come on, people.
Yeah, Uckaboo with
yellow. Use your goddamn brains.
Bro. Okay. Hold on 1 second. Like, I'm back and forth on this idea, but you honestly just made me think that it'd be dope as shit if you, as the connoisseur of hamburgers as you are.
You want me to open a hamburger place and call it Uckaboo's?
Uckaboo Burger, or Uckaboo's. Oh, yeah. Uckaboo's would be a great burger restaurant name. Uckaboo's Burgers, well, man?
It would be.
Isn't that fantastic?
Hey, listener Alex.
Yes.
Listener Alex, if I ever get the, if you ever want to put that together, I mean, I can see what I can do. I ain't got any money at this point. Maybe we can get some capital together, some something, something. I can do some the, I can do the financial parts. You can do the cooking because you got some cooking skills.
All you got to do, here's what needs to be done, man. Like, we just need to establish a specific hamburger recipe and then patent that recipe. And it starts from there, man. That's all you got to do.
Listener Alex, you better be paying attention.
This could be huge, man. I love this idea.
Although I'd love to have listener Alex be involved in it, but it's not going to happen due to geographical reasons. But still, the more so than you even realize. But still, yeah.
You're going to have to explain that to me later. But
I'll explain the geographic part later.
Yeah.
But, hamburgers are, apparently they've been a staple important thing in my life since I was learning to talk. That's how, the fact that that's the only thing that I came up with a strange name for was a hamburger. They do mean a lot. So yes, that was entirely meant as a compliment to your wife who,
I completely understand. Yeah.
She would probably agree. She'd agree to say if anybody else had said that, I'd be like, "What the hell?" But James makes sense.
Now that established, and I appreciate that. Going back to we were talking about Lady Gaga. Okay, so one of my favorite things that she's ever done, back when my wife and I were first dating, we came back after Thanksgiving, and we were just trying to like pass the time. And so we turned on the TV and we still had like standard terrestrial, like network television. We don't even have that right now. Like everything we watch is streaming. We don't watch.
Oh, so you had cable then?
No, we had channel fucking 10 is what we had. And I think it was, we had like 3, 10 and 13. Yeah. We had like rabbit ear level stuff that was going on at the time. And I remembered this because we were just like, we don't have anything to watch. We have no cable. Because I spent like a decade without cable. Like, as soon as I moved out of the house, the only thing I'd watch were like rented movies. And that was like it. I never like, or I watched rented movies. To pass my time, I watched rented movies and I wrote music. Like, those were the two things I did. I barely even played video games for like 10 years. And so anyway, we were like, well, let's just hang out, turn on the TV, see what's going on. And Lady Gaga had a Thanksgiving special that she was doing. The weird, like, elaborate kind of fucking theater shit with... I remember there was one musical performance, and there was one big performance. Dancers fucking everywhere. People, like, you know, you have, like, the freaking acrobats and the chandeliers and, like, all this crazy shit going on. But there were people sitting at dining tables on the floor. So it was like a theater with what would normally be theater seating that's cleared out, and you've got dining tables in this small theater. Mm-hmm. And she's doing the whole thing. It's very, this is back when she was like been around for like 3 or 4 years or something like that. So she was still kind of doing like that quasi material girl thing before she really found her footing. And I say that, but she had a network television special. I'm pretty sure she found her footing at the time, right? But anyway, she's like doing, it's kind of got this, she's got the ball gown and the whole thing. And she's doing, I can't remember what the song was that she was doing. But there's one point where she fucking grabs, like she's got the wireless mic. And I'm curious as to whether or not with as elaborate as this is, because she's belting. But she's being twirled around by her dancers and like she's super physical. And I'm sitting there looking at this and going, there's no way she's not lip syncing. And she completely disproved that to me because she gets taken off of the stage. She's walking around. She's singing. I'm thinking this is a lip sync. She puts her hand in somebody's fucking mashed potatoes and shoves a fistful of mashed potatoes in her mouth midline. And you could definitely tell, like, she fucking just, no fucks, absolutely shoves mashed potatoes in her mouth mid-song, mid-performance, I think it might have been just to prove the fact that she was real, and she gained every amount of respect that I could ever have for anybody as an artist at that point in time. That was the most badass thing I'd ever seen somebody do with no reckless abandon. I absolutely loved it. And since then, I have been like a full 100% fan. Just to know that not only does she write her stuff, not only does she have the capability to do these crazy bombastic things, but like that's probably the most real shit I've seen in a long time. And I love anybody that just is fully dedicated to their craft. But when you get her for anything, musical, I can't remember the musical she did. It was, oh my God. There was another musical she did that was a huge one. I knew the original one had, I think, Barbara Streisand and Kris Kristofferson.
Star is Born.
Star is Born. She did Star is Born with Brad.
Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper, yeah. Cooper, right?
Bradley Cooper.
Bradley yes. Cooper. I mean, thought you said Hooper. Dude, I wasn't sure.
No, Bradley Cooper. Dude, you're on a podcast with the movie guy. I could.
Thank just, you. I couldn't remember. I apologize. I am sorry as tangenting as I am going right now, but but I honestly like, and I've seen parts of that. I have not seen the whole thing, but everything I've seen that she actually does feature film wise, she's fucking incredible at. So now I'm of two minds, kind of, but at the same time I'm like, what the hell are you going to do with a film
you have one reason you want to watch it, which is what can Lady Gaga do with this? The other reason is like, this was a fucking serious movie, and you're going to turn this into a musical? The only way that this works is if they're just going through different medication trials while he's at Arkham, and the musical parts are his freakouts from the medications not working. That makes it work, I guess. But even still, that totally takes away from the more serious and almost politically charged tone of the original film. It's like, okay, whatever. I just want to point out for a second here. Want to point out two things. One, it's always that moment of, damn, I want to watch it, but I don't. When you find somebody, a single actor sometimes in a movie that before you'd have been like, nah, it's not my type of film, I'm not going to get into it. Example, just recently, Jordan Peele has been doing some amazing films, but sadly they're all horror films, which is bothersome to me because I love his comedy. Key and Peele was fantastic. He's a genius comedic presence, but he's tapping into this other side of his creativity with really, really good horror films. They are very good horror films from my understanding of it. I don't know because I don't watch horror films. I stay the hell away from those. I'm not into watching them. But he's been being considered one of the great new horror directors.
Oh, that guy has become, honestly, like, that guy has become the new Rod Serling. And I mean that on all accounts.
Exactly.
That guy's doing Serling Hitchcock-level shit. He's incredible.
So he's got this new movie, which I love the title of already. And I love the title. I love the way that the title is used in the trailers. Mm-hmm. This new movie, Nope. And it's literally just
nope.
At one point in the trailer, somebody's just kind of shaking their head. Nope. Like they're not going to get the actor that's in Get Out, the main actor in Get Out.
Yeah.
And he's just like, nope. And so it's great. I'm watching the trailer. I'm like, yeah, it's kind of cool looking, maybe some sci-fi thing, but it might be a little too scary for me. I'm on the fence, and then I'm watching the trailer and I see a face and I'm like, I know that face. I know that face when it's younger, but I definitely know that face.
Yep.
And yeah, all the guy says is, yeah. And I'm like, holy fucking shit, it's him. It's him. And I'm watching this with my wife. Okay? I'm watching this with my wife. And I'm like, oh my God, did you see who that was? She's like, no, who? I gotta look. So I pull up the IMDb. I look. I'm like, yes, it's him. I'm like, that dude. She goes, why do I know that name? I'm like, hold on. I rewind it because we have cable that rewinds. I rewind it, show her the preview again, and she's like, I pause it even on the face. She's like, I know that face. I know that face. I'm like, let me do an impression for you. Caw, caw, bang, fuck, I'm dead. She's like,
wait.
Oh my God, really?
I
what?
I don't know that one.
You don't know that?
No.
I'm gonna do an impression for you. Call, bang, fuck, I'm dead.
I don't know that one.
That's a line from a movie. The movie is The Crow.
Wait. Fuck off, no way. You're kidding me.
Michael Wincott, who plays Big Top in The Crow, who was Guy of Gisborne in the
Crap no.
of actually, we shouldn't
no
call
fucking
it the Kevin
way.
Costner
that
Robin
guy,
Hood.
They got him?
We shouldn't even call it the Kevin Costner Robin Hood. We should call it the Alan Rickman Robin Hood, because let's be honest.
Right, but talking... that's where I remember. I'm not as familiar with The Crow as I am with Robin Hood. And yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Holy shit, no way.
We're talking.
Michael Wincott is in this movie? Michael Wincott. Okay, the part that freaked me out was the fact that they've got... Okay, so I don't know if this is the case or not, but so I, as someone who used to work at Fry's Electronics, the fact that there is a Fry's Electronics employee in this film, apparently, as a pivotal character, because they put him all over the fucking trailer. Like, he's part of this shit. And
I mean, that's if they did something blockbuster related, you know, in a movie. That'd be like, I'm watching it just for that. Captain Marvel.
I want to know
Marvel, when Captain Marvel arrives on Earth.
Yeah.
She lands in a blockbuster video. I was just like, yeah.
Oh, right. No. Well, here's the funny part about Fry's Electronics is they ceased operations, but the company isn't dead. So I want to know, what is the representation of this company?
That's a good question.
Because they quote unquote died in February 2021. And I'm curious, is like, how do you get that? Like, I know that they still have the trademark. It's Fry's Electronics is a family owned business. It got national level. Like, they were in multiple states. They were in almost all 50 states. They were huge, but they were still a family owned business. They never went public. They were always private. And so for me to see that and go, who the fuck did you get a hold of? Because they were ironclad with their licensing, and I knew that as a former employee.
I'll say this. I know that the movie takes place in California, so there is that.
Shut up! No way! Oh my god! I've got to see this film.
The setting of the movie is in California, but yeah, I see Michael Wincott in it, and I'm like, I had said nope to watching this. I can't say that now. I have to see it because it's got, I mean, Michael Wincott's enough to make me be like, I just kind of want to see what they do with Michael Wincott in the movie because I love him as an actor. So that's the one point. It's, you know, sometimes you have those moments where because one actor's in it, you're like, I almost have to watch it. Willem Dafoe. It's hard for me not to watch a movie that Willem Dafoe is in. There's a few I won't, but it's hard for me not to because I freaking love Willem Dafoe. Almost everything he does, I love the work that he does in the films. But like, there's that, there's the Lighthouse movie. I'm not sure I want to see that. That movie's all messed up. But anyway, the point I'm getting to here is sometimes you have those moments. And then the other thought that I had, you're talking about this Thanksgiving, show that you were watching. You're sitting there with your girlfriend.
Yeah.
Right, at the time.
Girlfriend at the time, yes.
You turn on TV, you can't figure out anything to watch. And the best thing that you could think to do, your solution was to watch a Lady Gaga special instead of the other solution that you could have had. Mike, some more forward thinking would have been good.
Sir, do you think that didn't also happen?
I hope it did.
Of course, really?
I don't want details. I don't want details. I'm just saying. Yeah. All right. On that note.
Do you think that was the way we ended the night?
I hope not. On that note, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we can't talk about the Multiverse of Madness yet because Mike hasn't watched it yet. We can't talk about Obi-Wan yet, even though it's over. Oh, my God. All I'm going to say is, one... No, I will say a little bit about it when we get back. I have two things to say that won't give much away. One of the things I already told you, another one is a revelation that I had during the watching of it that, again, won't give too much away, won't give really anything away as far as plot goes. But just so two commentary on Obi-Wan when we're back from break. And I guess there's another movie, since we've been talking about the Joker, there's another movie that we can mention that I had the opportunity to watch. Our announcer, Scott, actually was the one who recommended for me to watch this movie. And I have some commentary on that. It's available streaming on HBO Max now, so people have seen it. And I'm loading this. People want to hear the second half Because I spoke with my father. I know about the plate. And I'm going to tell you about it.
Okay.
When we come back.
All right.
Hey friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now, back to the show.
And we are back.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to go down the line and start how I explained it for the break. That was, you know, such a long time ago. The Obi-Wan series, which we can't quite talk about yet because I really want Mike to watch it. He's agreed to finally figure out a way to get Disney Plus to be able to watch it. Same with the Multiverse of Madness. I told him he needs to watch WandaVision. Anybody else that hasn't seen Multiverse of Madness yet, watch WandaVision first. Trust me, you need to. It is necessary knowledge for what happens in Multiverse of Madness. Multiverse will not make sense unless you have seen WandaVision. But hey, you're going to love it because WandaVision is amazing.
I'm willing to watch WandaVision to prepare myself for a Sam Raimi film. Like that's where I'm at.
Trust me, you know, Sam Raimi is kind of an homage to horror films while still making horror films.
Oh, he's full-fledged comedy horror, man. The best type. Okay. He does slapstick horror. Isn't that great?
It is.
I love that.
WandaVision
Drag Me to Hell was one of the funniest fucking movies I've ever seen. It's incredible.
WandaVision is an homage to television, period. To the right medium on. Of television, okay. It is a full-on homage.
All right.
And it does it so beautifully.
Cool.
Anyway, the Obi-Wan show.
Yes.
I can't give any plot details away. I can't talk about anything because I want Mike to have the experience. However, there are some things that I'm sure that he's seen, some things that have been released.
Some things, yes.
There are, I will say, there are various flashback sequences.
Okay.
But in specific, there is a moment where Darth Vader, because Darth Vader is in it, if you didn't catch the drift on all of that.
Of course.
There's a moment where Darth Vader is on the bridge of a Star Destroyer. He's not on the Executor, by the way. He's just on a regular Star Destroyer. Executor hasn't been made yet because this is still, this takes place about 9 years before the Death Star and the Battle of Yavin. Well, 9 years before episode 4.
Okay? Right. I knew it was probably close to a decade before based upon the ages of certain characters I've looked up. So
yeah, it's nine years beforehand. So he does not have Executor, his Super Star Destroyer yet. He just has a Star Destroyer.
Okay.
But he's on the bridge of the Star Destroyer at one point. And he's, you know, looking as contemplative as a guy with a mask can look. And it's connected to, that exact scene is connected to flashback sequences of Anakin when he's younger.
Okay.
Which I feel that this is an official decree from Lucasfilm and from Disney that my order of watching the Star Wars movies, i.e. watching episode 4, then watching Rogue One, because you can watch Rogue One to see the plot of how they got the plans for the Death Star, then watching episode 5.
Yep, okay? 5, and then 1, 2, 3.
Then 1, 2, 3, as Darth Vader watches his son leave on the Millennium Falcon. Yep. 1, 2, 3. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As he watches his son leave, he has a flashback, and the entirety of the prequels are a flashback. This is Disney in this one scene saying, "You're right, James. You are exactly right." When we see the prequels, that's Darth Vader flashing back and remembering his life before he became Darth Vader, and that's exactly the way the scenes play out in one of the episodes. And as I'm watching it, I'm going, "Yes, it's exactly what I said." So you have it, Mike. Lucasfilm has confirmed my order of watching the movies is correct.
Interesting.
Yes. And when you see the moment happen, you're going to be like, because now I've pointed out to you, you're going to be, holy shit, that's exactly right. I can totally see exactly where James was coming from on this, because I'm right. Especially when it comes to Star Wars.
Wasn't I the one that pitched Rogue One after episode 4?
You might have pitched Rogue One after episode 4.
I pitched Rogue One after episode 4, but everything else was you. Like, I'll give you full credit on that.
The episode 5...
Now I got to go back and listen to
1, 2, and 3.
What? Yeah. Now I got to go back and listen to it to double verify. I got to make sure I'm not wrong. I might be.
We'll see. I know. I at least know that I said I watch 1, 2, and 3 after 5 is a flashback. I know that much.
Okay.
But the other thing I'm going to say, and this is the thing I said to you, once I saw the completion of this whole show, this Obi-Wan series is actually what I was hoping that the third episode of the prequels, when the prequels were first announced way back in the 90s, when they had first talked about the prequels, much of what happens in this Obi-Wan series is the things I was hoping I would see in the third episode of the prequels. Because my hope back in the day, my hope was by the end of the second episode, you know, episode one, whatever, you establish Obi-Wan meeting Anakin and they start their training and whatnot.
Yeah.
I didn't know what all stories would happen, but my hope is at the end of episode two would have been when Anakin turned to the dark side. And the third episode would have been Anakin as the Sith apprentice hunting down all the Jedi.
Right.
And it would have culminated in, as episode three did, a battle between Obi-Wan and Anakin. But they would have been antagonists the entire movie, just barely escaping each other, maybe fighting for a short time and being separated, whatever, as he's slaughtering other Jedi. And it just would have been, the third movie just would have been Anakin full force destroying everything and Obi-Wan being the only person that could stop him and having the conflict of trying to stop him. But Anakin, the whole movie was going to be full on evil. He'd already turned to evil. That was what I was hoping for. And after each encounter, he kills the different Jedi, but he loses bits of himself after each encounter until the final end is when he gets put in the mask because Obi-Wan damaged him enough.
Yeah.
From their final fight and thought he died. Again, similar to what happened at the end of episode three, but I wanted a full movie of Anakin just being evil as hell and just going through watching this character just slaughter everything. I wanted that because we want to see the true progression to evil. The thing that happened in episode three, you didn't see the progression fast enough. It's like, my pregnant wife is going to die. I'm going to be evil now. I'm going to kill some kids.
Yeah, no, that was super slapped together. And I mean, a lot of the dialogue drug along really badly. It was so simple. It was so like, how do you write a tragic story for children?
You get Lawrence Kasdan to write the screenplay instead of having George Lucas write the screenplay.
Fair.
George, you have great ideas. You need to have other people do good things with your ideas. And that's what's been happening.
He should have. That's exactly what should have happened. With the prequel films, it would have been a freaking smash if that was the case. You know,
they would have been. Now, what I can say is because of what this Obi-Wan series did, it gave me enough of a portion of what I was looking for in episode three. It gave me enough of what I didn't get. And I believe it makes up for the sins of episode three, especially because
holy crap, really?
Specific scenes that happen in this make up for some of the sins of episode three. Not all of them, but some of them, yes. And the one thing that they do keep in there, George Lucas had this thing about wanting to have, he believed that the movies were a kind of, he saw them in an idea of poetry and of music where there's recurring themes and motifs and notes and they mirror each other. They go back and forth. You see things happen one way and then you see them a different way in the different versions of it, but they're all kind of interconnected. So he wanted to have that kind of, you see the correspondence between the different films in that. It's again, it's like poetry. It's like music. You know what I mean?
Okay, mm-hmm.
The music part makes sense to you more. They bring those out in this. They hit those exact notes exactly where they need to. They only bring in appropriate music when they need to, literal music when they need to. But they hit all of that rhyming back and forth. That this fits. I'm a firm believer now that The Mandalorian's a great show. It's a fantastic show. Boba Fett, it's an okay show. It's still fun, but if you are going to watch the Skywalker saga, the entire saga of the Skywalker family, Obi-Wan is necessary watching at this point. You have to watch the Obi-Wan series.
So it fleshes out so much of what happened in the prequels, it sounds like. It's basically everything felt like it was almost missing.
Not the prequels, just episode 3. It adds so much more to episode 3 that
does it add so much that it makes, like, if you have the context of Obi-Wan, does it make episode 3 more understandable and essentially watchable?
Yes.
Really? Because I fucking hated episode 3.
Well, here's the thing, though. There's a few episodes of...
There was so much potential there, and it was just so wasted to me.
Well, there's a few episodes of some animated series that have been done with Star Wars that are necessary, I think, to... I wouldn't say necessary, but that would help you with episode 3. If you were to watch the last, like, 3 or 4 episodes of the Clone Wars TV series...
Mm-hmm.
It actually takes place during the exact same time as episode 3. In fact, at one point you see Anakin and Obi-Wan leave where they're in the middle of the story. They leave the story because they've gotten word that that General Grievous has kidnapped Palpatine on Coruscant. And so it's literally them leaving to go to the beginning of episode 3.
Oh.
It's like, they're like, hey, we got to go. We have to go take care of, we got to go save the Chancellor, and we can possibly get Grievous because he's right here. We can destroy Grievous finally. And so, but we really have to go save the Chancellor. You know, Dooku's there. Grievous is there. We got to save the Chancellor. So that's the beginning of episode 3. They're there. They're like, we got to leave. We got to go. And they actually leave Anakin's apprentice, Ahsoka Tano, who's no longer his apprentice at that point, but they were there kind of helping her with something. They leave her on, Mandalore during the fall of Mandalore. And she takes on Darth Maul, who, yes, is still alive, who Darth Maul knows that Order 66 is going to happen. And you see in the last few episodes, when Order 66 happens and what happens to Ahsoka Tano and Darth Maul and some of the clone troopers that have been integral people in the Clone Wars TV series, you see what happens to them when Order 66 goes down. Moreover, in the Rebels TV series, one of the main protagonists in that is a Padawan who survived Order 66 because his master basically sacrificed herself so he could escape. Then you watch the TV series Bad Batch, the animated series Bad Batch. The first episode is Order 66 happening, and you see the apprentice from Rebels watch his master be killed and escape. So many of them, the events of episode 3, the Order 66 events, probably the most important thing that ever happened in the Star Wars universe. That's a hint for you, Mike. The things that you see in those TV series of Order 66 help flesh out more than just the montage of Jedi being killed by their clones. There's so much more to it.
Man, okay.
And that is like a tipping point in the entire universe of Star Wars, Order 66 is, and it's important in all of the series that it appears in. It's an important moment. Let's just put it that way.
That makes sense.
Keep in mind, Grogu from Mandalorian, he survived Order 66.
Oh my God, you're right. He would be old enough for it.
He was at the Jedi Temple. They actually do a flashback to him at the Jedi Temple for Order 66. It's a very short one, but they do have a flashback. When Luke touches his mind and you see a flashback to it.
Oh my God. And this, I'm assuming this happens during Mandalorian, because I haven't seen that yet.
This happens during the Mandalorian series, okay. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a very important tipping point. You watch those things, it makes episode 3 a little more palatable. It doesn't make it great, but it makes it more palatable.
Understood. Anyway, I get that. Anyway, I get that.
That's what I have to say about Obi-Wan now. We'll say more when you see it.
Yeah.
I was going to talk about this other movie. I'll mention it, and we'll actually talk about it on the next podcast, because I want to get into the plate story.
Okay.
So the other movie, Wet Your Whistles, everybody can tune in next week so that we can talk about it. I'm not sure if you saw it. I'm pretty sure you did, though. The Robert Pattinson Batman movie. I finally got the opportunity to see that movie.
I have purchased it. I have not seen it on streaming.
It was on HBO Max.
Right. It was on HBO Max. I don't have HBO Max, but yeah. I did purchase it on Blu-ray, and with the length of the film, I have not had the time to be able to sit down and watch the damn thing.
Oh, dear God, it was long. It was such a long
film. It's a long film. It's a very long film. I know how long it is.
I'm a guy who yearly do extended edition Lord of the Rings movie marathons.
Yeah.
We sit through all three movies extended edition over, if we start early enough in the day, we can watch it in a single day. Normally it takes us 2 days, but we watch extended editions. We do full on Harry Potter marathons.
Yeah, you do your full marathon stuff.
We do the Star Wars marathons. My wife checks out when episode 3 is on because she can't stand that one. But it's pretty universally panned. But I don't like episode 2 personally. But point is, we do all these things. It was such a long movie. But I do want to talk about it at some point, and I want you to see it before we do.
Because, I know, I was so excited about it. Like once I realized the context of what was going on and how they were putting things together and what they were going to be exploring in it, like, I've been so excited about it, and everything I've seen about it, it's made me really want to see it. But you got to book some fucking time to watch this movie.
You do. We had to take out just, it was a huge chunk of day just to, and for something that we weren't sure about the investment in. And I will say this, I got to watch it. I don't know that I will again. The one thing I'll tell you before you get into it, Robert Pattinson does not screw it up. Now,
that's fantastic.
Does he do a good job? Does he make it amazing? He is definitely higher on the list than Clooney. That's for sure.
I mean, that's setting the bar real low.
He does not screw it. He does not screw up being Batman. Although my favorite is Christian Bale, but a close second is Batfleck. But because I liked Batfleck as the version of Batman that he was. But Pattinson does a good job of being able to do the Batman, and then his Bruce Wayne is more of the he hasn't got his footing yet as the Playboy. He's still
right.
The tortured drama queen. But that being said, I have and Colin Farrell is unrecognizable as the Penguin. But that being said, the rest of it, I don't want to say any more, but I definitely want your opinion on it. It is unlike any other Batman movie I've ever seen. I will say that. Unlike any of the other ones.
I like that. I like the idea of that. I want to, like, gosh. I feel like I've missed out on so much recently. I've been trying to keep up, you know?
Well, the Batman discussion will come from a later day, but...
Yes.
Last week, which, by the way, I did listen. I just want to let you know, we put the podcast out on Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting here in my office like I am right now doing this podcast, and I was at work. I was clocked in for work, doing my work, my new job. I love my new job. I can't say that enough. I'm doing my job, and I thought to myself, sometimes I'll listen to music, sometimes I'll listen to whatever. I thought, you know what? Why don't I listen to me? Well, and you to a lesser degree, but why don't I listen to me? See if I still have it after all this time after we took a break. So I put it on to listen to me, and I was laughing at us. It was great. It was fun. You know, it's like, I remember saying all those things. It's fantastic. So later that day, actually, no, it wasn't that day. It was the next day. Later the next day, I end up calling my dad to see how things are going. He's, you know, doing all the things he's got to do right now, a lot of busyness. And I mentioned that we had done the podcast again. He's like, oh yeah, I saw you put a new one out. I haven't had a chance to listen. He occasionally will listen. He understands some of it, doesn't understand all of it. That's okay. He's old. It's all right. I forgive him. I mentioned the different food things. We had a discussion about food. Found out that he cannot stand fried okra, mainly because his grandmother used to burn the fried okra.
That sucks. Like, I actually really like fried okra.
Blimey. And then I was talking to him. He was talking about finding, seeing a recipe for bacon wrapped Brussels sprouts. I'm like, Dad, you don't need to wrap them in bacon. You can just pan fry them. They're fantastic. First of all, they've been genetically modified, so they don't even taste the same as they would have tasted like 30, 40 years ago, probably the last time you ever tried them. Second, back then people would steam them or boil them and make them into some gooey, nasty, snotty mess. No, sir. You pan fry these things and they're still somewhat crisp, but just soft enough. You get a nice browning on one side of them. They are amazing and fantastic. I will make them for you sometime. You can try them. If you still hate them, that's fine. But now I'm the parent going, just try one bite. we talked about the fact that my mother did not necessarily have the best cooking skills, and she would over-season things, and literally her seasonings consisted of salt, meat tenderizer, garlic salt, apparently garlic powder, that's the one I didn't remember, and lemon pepper, which she put on basically everything. That was the end of all spices. We had tacos with whatever ground beef she made in the tacos. Yes, the tacos she would put ketchup on. I found out she also liked to put olives on her taco, whatever. But the ground beef would literally be seasoned with garlic salt and probably meat tenderizer, and that's it. So yeah, that was my life growing up when it came to seasonings. But okay. I mentioned that we had talked about her making chicken fried steak. He's like, oh yeah, it was very salty. I said, yeah, the fun thing was mentioning the plate that she would use. I'm sure you still have the plate, Dad. He goes, oh yeah, I still got that. I'm like, yeah, you know what I'm talking about, the plate to tenderize it. Yeah. And you know, Mike was freaking out about the plate. He's like, why? He's asking, could they not afford a meat tenderizer? Did she learn it from her mom? I explained the whole story to him about how I talked about my grandmother, my Sicilian grandmother.
Yes.
And all the different things. And now they would have had enough money. I'm like, I told them they were middle class. They could afford it. And he's like, yeah, they could have afforded what they wanted to. They just never spent any money on anything. They were just, you know, they wanted to save as much as possible. Your grandfather wanted to pretend he had more money than he really did. Because they were probably lower middle class, but they were still middle class. Guess who my grandfather voted for? Anyway, constant source of irritation between him and my father.
Okay,
but anyway, but for years until my mom died and they stopped talking to each other. I don't think he's talked to them since then. It's beautiful. He loves it. My dad doesn't. I'm saying. But anyway, I have no idea why mom did that. And he's like, I know why she did that. And I'm like, hold the phone. You need to tell me. Cause I gotta tell Mike.
Yeah. I gotta hear this, man.
Who taught her to use the edge of a plate to do this and all the meat tenderizer? He's like, well, my mom taught her.
What?
I was like, what? Yeah, exactly. What?
Wait.
Norma taught. Norma was my grandmother. She has long since passed. 28 years ago she passed away. So she's been passed for a long time. She's actually the reason why I moved to the area that I live in now. And if it wasn't for that moment in her passing away and my father being able to get a house, I never would have moved up here. I never would have met you for sure, but I also would have never met my wife and had my kids. So, you know, moments that happen. Remember we were talking about moments before? Moments that happen. Am I sad my grandmother died? Yes. Am I glad? Also yes. Have I told my dad this? Yes. And my dad's response, yeah, that's my dad's response when I have told him. I'm sad that your mom died. I really am. But I'm also kind of glad because none of these things would have happened. His response is, yeah, okay, that tracks. I can understand that. Makes sense. My father gets me. But I'm like, so, and then it starts
Why?
Making sense to me. It starts making sense to me that my dad's mom showed my mom how to do this, because now he doesn't go into all this detail. He goes into a few, and I'll get the points where his detail. But like I said about her stepmother, the one who raised her, the Sicilian grandmother that raised her, the Sicilian stepmom for her, but grandmother for me.
Right.
That woman wouldn't have made chicken fried steak. She never would have done it. And even if she had, she definitely would have had all the proper tools to do it. But that wouldn't have been a thing for her to make. And if she did, she'd probably make it. She might have made it as like some kind of veal parmesan. Maybe do something like that. Which is technically chicken fried steak.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But not really. You know what I mean? It's technically is. I mean, it's still a piece of meat that is still a piece of, well, baby cow, but still cow that has been made tenderized and then breaded and then served, but with the veal parmesan, there's other stuff on it. It's not just here you go, have steak.
Right.
It's better than steak normally is because we also fried it. Fried hamburger. Moving on. So it makes sense that this wouldn't have been something that my mom's stepmom would have taught her to make. However, it makes even more sense that it was my dad's mom, because her family, specifically her mother's family, were from Oklahoma, and there was some they were somewhat dislocated during the Dust Bowl. Some of them dislocated out to California. So they were farmers in Oklahoma that kind of got screwed during the Dust Bowl. And many of them had to come out to California. They were a very, very poor family. They were a family of like 14 kids. My great grandmother was one of 14 kids.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
You know, you need people to work the farm that are, you know, you don't have to pay them. That's the truth. And it became once you couldn't have
welcome
those
to
other
American
people,
history, ladies and gentlemen.
Once you couldn't have those other people take care of your farm without getting paid, you start having to make your own
really man
to take care of your farm.
Really, you had to say
I'm being honest.
That way.
Hey man, I'm not talking about Supreme Court decisions today, am I? Moving on.
What?
I may be talking about some weird tangential history here, but I'm not dealing with some of the things that are happening right now that I know are incisive topics. So anyway, we're moving on. my great grandmother came from a Depression era family, and she was always tight fisted with money. She was always, you know, used the very last bits of things. She's the only person on my dad's side of the family that was demanding that you clear your plate and eat every little bite. And so my grandmother, my dad's mom, growing up in that type of a household, they learned how to do things in different ways. And when my dad was growing up, he knows his mother didn't have much as far as, making money. So he had a pretty poor upbringing as far as not having any money. This doesn't mean that he didn't have a nice house and nice things to be taken care of. Cause even being at that level of poor back in the 50s and 60s is different than sometimes the being poor nowadays or being poor before that. The 50s and 60s were a little bit nicer time to actually be poor. Scary enough. You wouldn't think so, but they were. We'll do a history lesson on that later. The post-war years in the United States, even for poor people, was better than it was pre-war and better than it is now. But still.
Right.
Tight with money. He remembers nights where, you know, all they had to eat for dinner that night was a skillet of fried potatoes because potatoes were cheap and that's all his mom could afford. Those things happen. But taking, you know, bad pieces of meat and beating them out to tenderness to be able to bread them and fry them, that would be an easy way to, you know, make things stretch, make the dollar stretch a little bit. And anything that you can cover in gravy, you're guaranteed is going to come from either the South or the Midwest. They love them some gravy in the South and the Midwest.
That's true.
I can't blame them. Gravy is amazing.
Yeah.
So it was my dad's mom who, probably because chicken fried steak was one of my dad's favorite foods, thought she was probably doing my mother a favor by teaching her how to make one of... Now, I want to add, my dad was an only child. And his nickname from his mom was Sonny. That's what he was called for even up into his adult life.
That's awesome.
Everybody that knew his mom called him Sonny. Interestingly, cool. Everybody knew his grandmother called him Tinker. But
Tinker.
Because he liked to play with Tinker toys when he was little.
I love it.
Back when those were a thing.
Both of those are very Southern nicknames, man.
Yeah. So I mean, and that's Sorry. You know he was Sonny. He's still Sonny to certain people. People still call him that.
Oh yeah.
He's
oh yeah.
He's
you don't
old ass man.
You don't ever fully give up that name, especially the family that grew up with you with that name. No, you are always that.
Admittedly, I have about six people left in this world who are allowed to call me by my childhood nickname. Only six. Nobody else gets that honor to call me by that. My wife is not allowed to call me by my childhood nickname.
My aunt, my brother's name is Scott. My aunt used to call him Scooter all the time. My aunt still is the only one who calls him Scooter.
Yeah, no,
that's a thing, actually, man. It's a family thing.
Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, there may be 10 people. And they're the only people that are allowed to call me that. Otherwise, right. I will not respond to that name.
Right.
I don't even know if you know what that name is. We'll talk about it after. But anyway.
Don't give me that. Don't tell me that name.
I won't. This is probably
compelled to remember it.
This is probably my grandmother trying to be nice, trying to be helpful. You know, she's going to teach my mother, who was willful and a bit hard to handle as just a human being. Mm-hmm. This was my grandmother trying to teach her how to be obedient to her husband. Never going to happen. You know, can you imagine? You knew my mom. Could you ever have imagined her being obedient to her husband? Ha! Which she shouldn't have to be. This old school mentality, and it's a good thing that she wasn't. My dad appreciated that she wasn't, because he didn't want a woman obedient to her, to him. He wasn't in for that thing, but
right.
You know, his mom was still in that old mentality. Got to be obedient to your man, especially when he's my little sonny boy. So this was probably my grandmother trying to teach her to do this. Now, my grandmother had been smoking probably since she was 13 years old. Keep in mind, she had my dad when she was like 16 or 17. But she'd probably been smoking since she was 13 years old. She smoked until the day she died. We know that because when her body was found, there were cigarettes that had gone out that she was smoking probably when she died on either on the floor or on the couch. They didn't set the house on fire, surprisingly. But when I took over her old room, when we moved up into her house, I would just randomly find burn stains on the floor from where she would drop cigarettes. Because, yeah, smoked till the day she died. So she had lost, by any probably point in her life, she'd lost the majority of her taste buds from smoking. So she is also the one that taught my mother to use meat tenderizer in the massive quantities. But she would use this plate. She had a plate. My grandmother had a plate of her own that she used to do her chicken fried steak with. And her theory was, with the edge of the plate, this is the part my dad is describing to me. With the edge of the plate, you can actually get more through the meat and tenderize the meat better than you can with any kind of a mallet or hammer, because the edge of that plate just puts like little cross section into the meat. So you do it one way, you turn it 90 degrees, do it another, so you have a crosshatch, flip it and do the same thing to the other side. And that gives you actually a better tenderized piece of meat than if you use a traditional, like actual real meat tenderizer, like the machine that you put it through and it pokes holes in it and tenderizes it like they do for cube steak.
Yeah.
Or the using the hammer, the meat tenderizing hammer, the metal one with like little spikies on it. No, this apparently tenderizes it even more so. And come to think of it, while my mother's chicken fried steak was very salty from all the meat tenderizer and the other stuff, the one thing I can say about it is it did qualify as having the one thing that I believe chicken fried steak needs to have. You need to be able to cut a chicken fried steak with the side of your fork.
Right, absolutely.
You could always do that with her chicken fried steaks. So maybe the plate is the secret ingredient. Maybe they weren't so crazy after all. I mean, they were, but not about this. Maybe they were right about this. Maybe we need to start using plates to make our chicken fried steak. Just be careful and use some good quality stuff like Corel or something. Corel doesn't break typically. Use something that's fairly good quality so it's not going to shatter in your hand. But hey, maybe they're onto something. Maybe they knew something that we don't to make the steak even more tender. I don't know.
You know, man, I feel like have you ever seen the I can't remember the name of the meme. Remember the meme of the guy that's in the middle of the rave that just like is having an epiphany? Like it looks like he's having a spiritual experience.
Yes.
I
know the meme you're talking about.
Yeah, I can't remember what the name of the meme is. I feel like that guy.
Okay.
Because everything you said makes so much sense.
So, insofar
like,
as what the plate
I,
does,
I want to have to. I have to want to try it now. Oh, as, okay, as okay. Far as, I just googled it. I just googled it. It's Sudden Clarity Clearance. That's the name of the meme.
Okay. So you're talking about so far as what the plate does to the meat and why it makes it
yeah why it allows it, like the thing that the standard that you hold to a good chicken fried steak, and the fact that obviously so the chicken fried steak you grew up with and the way that it was made, and that being such a pivotal ingredient to it, that helps signify a proper chicken fried steak. I love that so much. It's such a full circle type thing to me.
I do want to say all that description of why the plate works, that is not my that part is not mine. That's my father
that's how he described it
to me. As he's explaining to me why the plate was used, this is him explaining to me that, and of course putting the having the steak after you've tenderized it, having it soak in canned milk before you make it. I soak mine in buttermilk, but same difference.
Okay.
Either one, the acids in the milk are going to help break down the connective tissue. You have to soak it in milk and let it sit. You can't just put it in milk and then start going.
It's got to sit. It's got to break it up. Okay, yeah. Dude, hands it. Like when he told you this. When he told you this, what was your reaction?
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Which
just to wonder what that was for so long.
Well, just to wonder why. I never knew why. I knew that it was there to tenderize it, but who taught her to do that? Why the hell did she use a damn plate? She never explained it to me. That was just and you couldn't use that plate for anything else. Which probably is why I have things that you can only use for one purpose. I have, I have a coffee cup, and then I have a teacup, and then I have a different teacup. That teacup you put herbal tea in, but the other teacup you put just black tea in.
I love
and then,
this.
I have a cup for drinking milk out of. I have a cup for drinking water out of. And you can't put the other things in the cups that are. And I have a small milk cup, by the way, and a big milk cup in case I want a lot of milk. So
this sounds like other set complexes from other things. This could be more than just the one designated plate, but
I know that there's multiple things that help create that context. As I've said before, though, I'll say this: I am fair about it in the sense that I have my cups that are my cups that nobody else is allowed to use, and one for each purpose. And I am more than willing to make sure that my wife and my children have their own separate cups for their own separate purposes. So when they tell me that, no, that's a cup for drinking this and I need another cup to drink that, I'm not the parent that's like, no, you can put them in both. I'm like, I totally understand you. Have two cups. It makes perfect sense. You cannot put that liquid into that cup because it doesn't belong. The other liquid belongs in there. You need a different cup for, I totally get it. It makes sense to me. Other parents are like, what are you talking about? It's just liquid in a cup. No, it's not. There's a difference. There's totally a difference.
That's fantastic.
I don't know. It's weird. Anyway, so we have solved the mystery of the plate. Mike,
dude,
now you know.
I love
You're going to try it.
Yes.
You're going to try it.
Yes.
Wisdom from my father. I'm serious. He's definitely somebody that we have to figure out a way. We got to get him on here at some point.
Yeah, I think it'd be
great.
We
got to get him on here to talk about something. Maybe we'll do an episode if we get near the football season. Maybe I can get him down here. You can maybe get announcer Scott over, and me and you and announcers. Well, me announcer Scott and my dad can talk about the upcoming football season. You can just kind of
work the board because I'm going to have absolutely nothing to contribute to that.
You might have a little bit to contribute. You never know. You never know. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if talking about John Wayne would be enough for to help you out. I don't know how much you can talk about John Wayne.
I don't know shit about John Wayne.
I mean, maybe we get him on here and talk about Chuck Norris. He used to be a big Chuck Norris fan back in the day.
Okay.
Norris. I'm behind Chuck Norris. Sylvester Stallone. Somewhat Arnold Schwarzenegger.
All right.
We can maybe talk about those things. But anyway, that's the wisdom from my dad. My grandmother on his side, his mom taught my mom how to make her chicken fried steak. And because she had no taste buds from being a smoker for her entire adult life and teenage life, taught her to over-season the hell out of everything. Because my mother wasn't a smoker. The only time she ever would smoke is if she got like super drunk, and then she'd smoke like 3 cigarettes and it would make her sick. And that only happened maybe 5 times in my life. Maybe. So yeah,
pretty good track record.
She wasn't really a smoker. So, you know, I don't know what's wrong with her taste buds. Although apparently she used to like to take a piece of bread, cover it completely in mustard, and then pour garlic salt on it and eat just that.
What the fuck?
People are weird.
That doesn't sound appealing in any degree. Like, and I love garlic salt.
So do I. And yet, yeah. I mean, butter with garlic salt. Fine. Butter and garlic powder.
Mustard?
Fine.
Mustard? No. What the fuck? Why?
Anyway, I don't know, and I can't ask her.
Who hurt you?
For my mom, I can tell you who hurt her.
No, I don't want to go that.
Her parents. They were bad parents.
Oh, anyway. My God.
They don't listen to this. They don't even acknowledge my existence. So I can say whatever I want about them.
Oh, hey, yeah. Free for all for you, my man.
Anyway, Mike, where can people learn about the secret of James's mom's plate?
Wonderful ender. Wonderful ender. You can check us out on our website, thezennialchronicles.com or zenchron.com. If you don't want to type that much, you can also check us out on most major podcast platforms like TuneIn and Google and all that kind of fun stuff. But you could also be checking us out on our YouTube page. And if you're not already there, you should go there. You should go to YouTube. You should type the Zennial Chronicles in the search bar to find our page and click on this podcast in video format. It's not an actual video. It's just an image. And maybe like our dumb faces might be there eventually, but we're going to get that figured out soon enough. However, when you are listening to this in video format on our YouTube page, please make sure that you click the like button down there underneath the video so that, you know, the algorithm knows that you like our stuff and all that. And then next to that, make sure that you click the subscribe button as well, because then that time, you know, when something comes out, you may have something popped up in your list, but there's one more extra special thing that you need to actually do. And James, I believe you know what that is, right?
Click the bell.
That's right. Make sure you click the bell next to the subscribe button. Excuse me. Next to the subscribe button so that you are notified. Like, I don't know, maybe it's on your phone, maybe it's on a computer. I don't know. I don't know what you use to listen to us, but
like when you get up in the morning,
yeah,
and you gotta go have a pee, and you're trying to have the pee, but then other parts of your body, you're like, nope, you're evacuating that orifice. We're gonna evacuate the other one too, and so you find yourself on the toilet at, you know, 4:45 in the morning for 15 minutes instead of just the 3 minutes that you were expecting.
And who knows why you ate what you ate last night in order to make that happen?
But that's not our business. Or you're somebody that just bodily functions happen like clockwork at the same time every day. Yes.
Either way, that's your time. Maybe you're going to be there for a while. Who knows? If you are, you're going to get a notification on your phone that we've got a podcast up. And at that point, you can just go ahead and click that notification and listen to us while you're there doing your business. Or maybe you're on the drive to work, or maybe you're having breakfast in the morning after you went through all that stuff.
Or maybe you're working from home and you just want to listen while you're trying to, you know, input numbers and stuff.
Yeah.
While you're listening to us, while you're liking us and subscribing and clicking the bell on YouTube, please make sure to check out Mike's other two channels. The first one that he's involved in, Ruling Note Music. This is Mike talking everything music. Last week we discussed a little bit his most recent video out about SD cards in some kind of piece of equipment that records shit. I don't understand. I got a guy that takes care of that. But if you want to understand, watch his videos, like, subscribe, click the bell on those, and of course the other channel that he has with his wife, Chronosode Games. This is Mike and his wife playing video games in chronological order of the story, not in order of the release of the games.
Yep.
This is one of those other things that they do when they're bored and there's nothing on channel 10.
Yes, exactly. Well, we don't have a famous singer stuffing their face full of mashed potatoes. This is what we do in our spare time.
So that's the kind of stuff you guys like to watch. Famous people stuffing their face. Got it. Anyway, thank you all for listening. We'll be back again next week.
Y'all have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.